It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We are here for one reason only, and that is to drum up attention and excitement for the season home opener at KeyBank Center, which comes up on Thursday. My goodness, thank you.
Let me peel
Chef
it up.
Mike from Delaware North. It has been a day of indulgence for many who work in and around the entertainment industry, as here at the arena they've been rolling out, for some quote-unquote VIPs, you know, to get them a little sample of what's to come this year. And then, as per usual, like, the scraps end up falling our way.
What's better?
And that would be the most effective. You should never identify this as scraps. This is elite turkey leg.
Right now I'm holding a supreme turkey leg with mac and cheese, bacon, a little barbecue drizzled chips and whatnot. But what is best? The VIPs that had to go up and really look at all the sampling, or us, Duffer? They brought the food to us. We're a step ahead of the VIPs here. I know we're starting the show on a lighter note. It's Tuesday. We didn't have a show yesterday. There's two games over the weekend. We're going to talk about all of it. But this was just brought up to us like 10 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we have to lead the show with these incredible food items.
We need a commercial break is what we need.
Yes.
But unfortunately, there has been, a break in the Sabres lineup here to start the year due to injuries. And
waiver claim.
What's that?
Waiver claim as well.
Waiver claim reassignments. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to get into. Two season opening losses to the Devils and not a lot of offense to speak of. So there was going to be, presumably an onus put on the power play and trying to work through its early season struggles. But the bigger question right now is Paterka not being a part of the main group at this moment after getting smoked in that open ice hit by Brendan Dillon.
Lindy said it was a concussion after the game. He did say it's a concussion. He was actually asked by a European reporter that didn't know that he had mentioned concussion, so he repeated it. So, Paterka is definitely going to be evaluated daily to see when he's able to return. Benson was going to be one of those where I thought he was going to be skating today, be part of the group, but probably not ready to go yet. And Obe Kubel going to be out a while, according to Lindy Ruff. When he appeared on Jeremy and Joe's show this morning on WGR. So so those are the updates, but there's injuries that are affecting three of the four lines on the roster right now. That's basically what it is.
And it means that Krebs today is skating with Thompson and Tuck.
Mm-hmm.
Yuri Kulik, who he got ice time, obviously, in the second game. But I think, to be fair, not unlike at times the entirety of the group, there just didn't seem to be a comfort level for him. Is that right?
Yeah, Lindy Ruff addressed it, said he was kind of nervous. And look, Yuri Kulik has played one game in the NHL and now two.
Yeah.
Right? So is that type of player, 20-year-old, that is a offensive-minded player going to take a little bit of time to get going with confidence and playing with that swagger?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, it's going to take time. But right now you're given a great opportunity playing with Cousins and Quinn. So you hope that it's shorter time to adjust and maybe being home, playing Thursday, playing Saturday, getting going a little bit now in the North American side of the NHL season. It may be good, but I'd like to see it having an impact a little bit sooner rather than later, and take your time developing into the player you want to be.
Right. They don't have enough full forwards today. Nope. Kulik is with Cousins and Quinn. You have the McLeod line intact, which is Greenway and Zucker. And you have Malenstein with Lafferty, yep, and Bryson filling in on the wing at this point in time. So yesterday, the team lost James Reimer on waivers to the Ducks. They reassigned Cale Clegg and Lucas Rusek to Rochester. And obviously, if they're short a forward here in the next coming days before the Kings roll in for the season, the home opener, pardon me, on Thursday, the opportunity is to just simply call somebody right back up. I would think it would be Rusek, but at this point, you know, that would be a guess at this point in time.
I think that would be a guess, obviously, and they would have to maneuver a couple of things because IR is going to have to be used if you're going to call up somebody, which is not in the cards right this moment, but it could be. So, I mean, you know, tomorrow and Thursday, roster decisions will have to be made before Thursday night. That could be Benson and Paterka are playing, and all of a sudden you have an extra forward again, and you know you're fine.
Right.
But it seems unlikely that both of them will be playing Thursday night. So one that rounds up your top 12. But if they both are not playing, you're going to have to make a roster transaction and go there. So,
but what's the bigger story here? Is it the injuries or is it the results? Or both, or like,
I think
how
they're both, and I don't want to sit on the fence. I think they're both. I will say the injury number one because it affects what is the majority of the game, right? Because you play the majority of the game at even strength, 5-on-5. So
we're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Okay, apologies for the technical difficulties, but I got to tell you, I was so unimpressed personally with how I started the show. I didn't think everybody else was that upset about it, but then they just yanked the plug and said, okay, we need a hard reset here.
We should have come back to the show with me just talking like we still thought we were on the air.
We pick up this very special blossom.
And this is the reason why the power play did not work, and then nobody heard it. Mm-hmm. I just went on a full spiel, and you know what, though? If we're licking our lips and making some funny noise, because while we were off the air for technical difficulties and the break, Duffer and I went into our turkey leg and supreme turkey leg, so we got a little taste, and we may pull the plug finish our meal that we're having right now.
So thanks again.
It is lunchtime.
Yes, it is. And honestly, it's a very strange time, not just for the show. Just when you spend so much time in Europe, the way they did.
Yeah.
And then you get the games, boom, boom, and you don't get the results. And then you have the long trek back, and you have days off, and then is it hurry up and wait? Or, like, what do you think it feels like right now for the guys on the ice at the game not being till Thursday? Is that, like, best-case scenario? Because, and especially with injuries, they're able to, I don't know, take a deeper breath and reset, as opposed to just, you know, kind of getting forced back into it here, if that makes any sense.
This is a unique situation, and I don't know that anybody can say, oh, I've experienced that in 2012 or in 2019, where, you know, we went over to Europe and then we had some injuries. It's very unique. Would I prefer to start now? Okay, let's come back. Let's have a couple of days of practice. Let's have the game at home. Let's have Saturday at home.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is the preferred situation for Lindy Ruff and his club, is that, okay, let's put in the work. This morning, they put in a power play practice over at Harbor Center before the main practice here at KeyBank Center, and they still did power play practice at KeyBank Center. Why? Because over at Harbor Center, it was more, okay, let's go through some of the things on power play we want to do without any defenders. Just let's go through the rhythm. But now we're going to bring it over here.
Mm-hmm.
So they have that the facilities to be able to put in more work.
Right.
When they were in Czechia, a lot of time we saw him getting dressed at the main rink, having to take a bus, go to another rink. You're a little limited in the things that you can do, which is no excuse because it's not like New Jersey was given more facilities to work on. It was the same thing. Mm-hmm. New Jersey looked really good. The Sabres did not look good. Now you got to find a way. You got to look at the numbers. You got to look at what areas of the game did not work well, which is a lot of areas in the game, especially offensively. Mm-hmm. And you got to be able to find a solution early on to those issues. Right before we went off the air, we asked, is it the injuries? Is it the power play? I think the injuries are number one, but it's not an excuse. I'm not going out there making an excuse. Hey, you know, it's okay they lost two games because they suffered injuries to Obi Kubel, Peterka, and Benson. No, it's not okay. Does it affect your lineup? Yes. Does it affect your special teams? Yes. But it's not okay. You can't use injuries because, you know what? Hey, the Devils didn't have Andre Palat in the second game because he went home for the birth of his child and all of that. So they were dealing with roster situations as well, and they still look good.
Brett Pesce, Luke Hughes,
yeah. Two on the back end, too. So you can compare the lineups. The Devils pushed, played well. The Sabres, on their heels, did not.
Are you now in wake of that, and it's, you know, a few days, are you surprised?
I'm very surprised. Although I look at my personal experience going over to Europe, and like I've told you before, the first 4 or 5 days, 6 days, I felt great. Mm-hmm. And then the second week, I was having a hard time sleeping. It's like the clock cut back to me. It's like that excitement wore off. And again, this is not, oh, the Sabres shouldn't have gone so early, whatever. It's about the results, right? Mm-hmm. You go and you win two games, and all of a sudden, well, they did it right. You lose two games, they didn't do it right. It doesn't matter. But when I look at the numbers in the two games, there's a lot of numbers that are really, really sticking out as where the offense has to improve and how scoring one goal in each game. And really, one goal in two games, because the Tage Thompson goal in game two, if the Devils were to challenge for goaltender interference, I believe they win that challenge.
Really?
Because Jordan Greenway absolutely snowplowed with a stick, Jake Allen, back into the net, and the puck was not on its way there. It was sitting in the crease, and Tage Thompson, after the snowplow, pushed the puck in.
Yep.
I think that goal probably comes off the board. So now you're looking, hey, we really scored one goal in two games, and it was Owen Power, you know, with Bo Byram behind the net. That's what happened in those two games.
So it's going to be the recurring theme, regardless of whether they end up getting back on individual paces of, you know, career highs or if they continue to struggle. So, like, let's identify what you saw. We'll start with the guys on the top line in Thompson and Tuck and, you know, what they could or couldn't do against a New Jersey team that I think it's very fair to say, especially knowing with Pesce and Hughes eventually coming back, like they do look like a very, very, very deep team. So, you know, but guess what? There are many of those. So in your mind, like what do 72 and 89 have to do here to get it looking more like, you know,
I felt like
at any point in the
Thompson and Tuck were trying to get too close to the net often. And what the closer you get to the net, the good defensive team are going to shut it down. Mm-hmm. And we showed on the Telestrator Saturday, Tage on a 2-on-1 could have taken a shot 25, 27 feet out. Yep. And he tried to get within 15 feet. And by that point, there's a defenseman, there's a goalie. So, and you look at the power goal in game one. It's a long-range shot from Tage Thompson that rebounds off of Jacob Markstrom that goes in. It's not let's try to get closer with the puck. It's when we get the puck there, let's have people at the net. Look at the Tage Thompson goal in game two. It's Alex Tuck who shoots it from far out. It goes off Thompson, off Greenway skate, and then it finds. Like, don't try to get so close to the net to always have that perfect look. Sometimes throwing a puck from outside with players at the net is more important than you trying to get to the net. But having said that, the Sabres in the two games had three grade A scoring chances. Three. That's it. It was Greenway and Thompson on the Thompson goal, and it was Tuck on the deflection in game one. So if you're looking at the top line of Greenway, Thompson-Tuck in Game 2 and Paterka-Thompson-Tuck in Game 1, that's really the only line mm-hmm. that got any grade A chances. So, you know, do they need to produce three or four grade A chances a game? Yeah, but they're the only one that got it done.
And you would assume, although it's not even a fair question right now because of the injuries, but you're assuming patience here among the forward group as far as minimal tweaking and changing the lines as possible here for the next little bit?
I think that's what I would suggest, and I think that's what Lindy Ruff is going to do. Like you mentioned, three lines are being affected, and when you look at what Lindy Ruff has done to his lines coming this morning, he kept Yuri Kulik with Dylan Cousins and Jack Quinn. Basically, saying, Kulik, you're going to take the place of Benson. Mm-hmm. He put Peyton Krebs with Thompson and Tuck. Basically, saying, Krebs, you're going to take the place of J.J. Paterka.
Yeah.
Where Greenway was elevated in Game 2 of Saturday.
Yes.
But now it's Krebs there, so Greenway can stay with McLeod and Zucker. Like, try to keep your lineup as close to what you had it.
Mm-hmm.
Just put a couple of players in those situations to not change all the work that they've done or tried to do in training camp.
Based on what the goal was for the bottom six, what did you see out of them in the first two games?
Not a lot. And I look, Obi Kubel missed played a half a game.
Yeah.
So it affected that line, Lafferty, Malenstein, and Kubel. I think we saw the best and most of them in preseason.
Mm-hmm.
And they played a half a game. I don't know that we've seen chemistry now yet from the Zucker, McLeod, and Greenway line. Although Zucker in Game 1 had like 8 or 9 shot attempts.
Had a good power play attempt, too.
Yeah, one-timer.
Like,
I felt like Zucker was more noticeable in Game 1. And then in Game 2, well, Greenway is being elevated after Paterka gets hit, right? So it disrupted the flow there. But I felt like Zucker out of McLeod and Greenway was the most noticeable one in Game 1. But the bottom two got very much affected in their flow of how they want to play and how they could play with their line mates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it just didn't have any sustained, zone time, if you will.
Game 1, New Jersey's bottom six really played well.
I thought they were really good in both games,
well,
honestly.
Game 2, it was the top line that really shined.
Eventually. You see, that's the thing. Like, it was a slow build, I felt, for Jack Hughes specifically.
Yep.
But, I mean, yeah, there's just a little bit more experience with the Devils, right? Like,
yeah.
The average age is couple years higher, 28 to 26, and even how they, reconstructed, it's a very interesting team. And if they get to that point of full health, I firmly believe that they will be one or two in the Metro Division. I think they can easily end up ahead of the Rangers and or Carolina. I really do. I think they're that deep. And if they... Again, that defense core, when fully healthy, is going to be something.
I think that defense core will be better offensively with Luke Hughes and Brett Pesce. That's where
Pesce's right now, so reliable defensively.
Defensively, like that, but I think there's speed there. There's skating ability. That's where the defense core of the Devils. But I put the Devils behind the Rangers and Carolina in my preseason prediction.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that the Devils are the top of the class in the Metropolitan Division, the top three, and at any moment those three can interchange. They start the season 2-0, they look good. So that's 5-on-5. That's what I saw 5-on-5
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the Thompson line, the bottom six. I saw a lot of the defense trying to join the rush, trying to help, but there wasn't enough from the offense, from the forwards, to create when the defense was joining. The 2-on-1 with Thompson in Game 2
mm-hmm.
was Clifton joining with Tage Thompson.
Yep.
The power goal in Game 1 was Byram and Power. We saw a lot of guys going up the ice, but nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
Even, and that was a big goal, the Dahlin was up on the play, tried to make a pass to Cousins in the slot, fumbles the puck. It goes the other way. They go around Devin Levi. That's the 2-1 goal.
Mm-hmm.
That was the game-winning goal in Saturday's game. But Dahlin is trying to make something happen offensively. I feel like the defense tried to, but you need your forward to to lead the way in that department. It really wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. And I know I asked you this, and so apologies for...
Was it during technical difficulties?
No, it was probably on heading into night one or night two.
Okay.
But just when you are in this situation, as small as it is, which is two games, would you be looking at different pairings? Or do you follow the same kind of script as the forwards? Like, let's be mindful and patient with what we're dealing with, which is a new group, because this is the first full year you're coming out of the training camp with Bo Byram. And
Samuelson,
right,
fully healthy, where he's missed some time.
And you know what? That's funny, because I was going to not dismiss it, but we know what Samuelson is.
Mm-hmm.
But we've debated this. We don't know who he's best suited to be playing with.
Yeah.
But I still think they need, like, you have to really maximize here what you can get out of Dahlin, Power, and Byram, all three of them together, right? So
I felt like Byram and Power really look good together, and that's why I'm not changing anything.
Okay. Yeah.
Because if there was a change, I'd say let's go back to what we thought before training camp.
Mm-hmm.
It would be Power and Dahlin with Jokiarju and Byram,
yeah,
and that's all your top four gets changed. But I feel like Byram and Power played really well,
mm-hmm,
especially Owen Power, where last year there was moments where, like, oh, he's just thinking the game slow. His feet are not moving. I felt like in game one and game two of the season right now, and in preseason, he's looked different. And maybe that's because Bo Byram is helping that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I'm not touching the defense because I feel Dahlin has another step. And Dahlin missed a lot of the training camp with the mid-body injury, played against the Red Bull Munich team, but mm-hmm, it's not an NHL. So he's played two games now. He knows, okay, how do I want to play? And I have a big, big step to take.
Mm-hmm.
So that will help. Dahlin and Jokiarju, fine. As long as Dahlin elevates, Byram Power, good. And look, I thought Connor Clifton was noticeable. I think Matthias Samuelson has more to give. That simple as that. But it's two games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's okay, you lost.
I know, it's hard to even get to that sentence, right?
It's like, two games.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know what? I started this season where I was 0-3 or whatever, and I'm like, you know what? I have more to give.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. I've got, you know, 55 more starts as a goaltender. Mm-hmm. I've got more to give.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, those two games may not matter as much. The difference is, can you really flip it, right? Can you really say, okay, that was two games, let's park him,
mm-hmm,
and now really play the way we want to play?
Goaltending was what?
There's two different answers. And that's, again, that's because there's two games and they both played. I thought Luukkonen was average. I think that he didn't get tested as much. He made a couple of big saves. Whatever. The numbers will say he was average, and I thought Levi was great. Lindy Ruff's quote this morning is, we wasted a really good goalie performance. A goalie performance that should have stole a point for us, mm-hmm, minimum, maybe even two.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Levi was really good. I think Levi's been great in camp.
Yeah.
I think Luukkonen has had his moments in camp, but it's still early. You find your groove, and then you run with it. I think Lukanen's got plenty of time to get that done, but Levi looked really good.
And the reason that question is worthy of a quick mention, at the very least, is there's now less depth behind,
yes,
that duo, based on James Reimer being claimed on waivers yesterday by Anaheim. So we talked a lot last week, as you always do at this time of year, when you have to send players through and whether anybody's going to get claimed. I wouldn't say it was a surprising number across the league of people claimed, but there were enough. There were enough, you know, interesting little moves. What does this mean in your mind that Reimer is now a Duck?
Well, it means more to me to the Anaheim Ducks than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking, okay, Reimer gets picked up by the Ducks because John Gibson has sidelined with the appendicitis. I think his appendix had to be removed. There was a couple of those around the league. So, Caden Goalie in Montreal, and I think Gibson. But, okay, maybe there's more now to the whole Anaheim goalie situation. Lucas Dostal, I really like.
Mm-hmm.
Gibson has been rumored for years now. He wants out this, that, the other thing. I'm almost thinking that Anaheim is looking at how can we just continue to survive without John Gibson, and who knows if he'll ever be back. That's the big question.
What? What do you mean?
I don't know if Anaheim is going to say, yeah, John Gibson, you're our guy. You're going to play some game. I think they're going to bring in Reimer, have Dostal, and then they may move on from Gibson.
Really?
Yeah. And they'll eat half of his salary, and they will move on from him.
Where's he going?
Well, that's the question. I heard a great quote on radio.
I mean, he's only out 3 to 6 weeks.
Yes.
Like,
and maybe, you know what? Maybe
I
that's
just assume,
not. Maybe
like,
they put Reimer back on waivers.
That's
waiver
all,
and he comes
that's
back
all
to
I
Buffalo.
Have thought the entire time was, well, he's just going to end up back on waivers, and I was eventually going to see if you landed there and was like, oh, he'll be back in 5 weeks.
I have had some big question marks when it comes to the Anaheim Ducks.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I don't want to put a big blanket over the media, but I feel like John Gibson has been a media darling a little bit and maybe an analytics darling a little bit for a few years now. I don't think he's that good, and I've said that. You know, I think over the years he was great, and he's gotten older, he's got injured, his numbers have dropped.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like John Gibson is not somebody that the league as a whole, other teams, are looking at, oh, yeah, let's go get John Gibson, and he'll be our answers, right, to our goaltending issues.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the deal hasn't happened. But now I feel like the Anaheim Ducks have to move on. They have to move on from John Gibson, and maybe that door opens by claiming James Reimer.
But he's not just going to disappear. Like, where is he going to go? Who's taking him? Like, that's just, like, guys like him don't just disappear out of the league.
Guys like him don't just disappear. But could the Vancouver Canucks say, okay, well, we'll give John Gibson a try if he's very cheap at half his contract, or if we can even broker a deal with somebody else. Somebody else takes half, we'll pay him a quarter.
Mm.
And now we don't know what Thatcher Demko is going to be healthy enough. But if you're paying $1.5 million or $2 million instead of the $6 million of John Gibson, it's a big difference. I took you down the wrong, a very long road.
No, I'm just incredibly distracted today because I have a gigantic turkey leg.
We haven't touched the power play yet, and I know we like our breaks are a little different now because of
we haven't.
We haven't touched on the power play.
We kind of did.
Well, I've got a lot more to talk about.
You
the
do?
Power play. Yes.
Damn.
I know. Yeah, we have the turkey. Hey, listen, I can talk about the power play.
But
take a bite.
So.
It's not personnel. I don't want to talk about personnel on the power play. I want to talk about structure and what happened.
I want to stay on the goaltending thing.
That's fine. We have plenty. We have half a show left.
It feels like it's been a long one. Do you start Levi or Luukkonen? Is that even a real question right now? It's not, right?
It's not. It is. There's no bad questions. There's just bad answers. It's like there's no bad passes. There's just bad people that receive passes in hockey. No, I think that you go with Luukkonen on Thursday against the LA Kings. You go with Levi Saturday against the Florida Panthers. You split your whole training camp.
Mm-hmm.
They play 90 minutes each, a game and a half each. You split Europe. I think you split those two. And then you give yourself a plan. Mm-hmm. Then you see who shines, who steps up. Now, would I say that Luukkonen is going into the season slightly ahead of Levi? Absolutely. So, you know, kind of like a coach's challenge or replay.
Yeah.
You know, if it's inconclusive, you continue with the call on the ice. I think if they're both equal in the first four games, you continue with Luukkonen, maybe gets two in a row now before Levi gets one. But you keep Levi engaged in that. But if we go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Levi separates himself, even if it's only four games, separates himself,
mm-hmm.
then I think you say, okay, let's take a look. Let's see what we've got. And so it's a great question because people are going to say, oh, who's starting Thursday? Because it's not as obvious as the Rangers would have played, or for example, the Devils coming back from winning two. Who's starting their first game is Jacob Markstrom. He's
of
the
course.
Number one goaltender.
Yeah.
Here, it's not as obvious as that.
No. And I'm kind of, because of that, I'm kind of reluctant to, well, shouldn't say it that way. Do you think Levi feels like he should get the game?
I think that you feel like you should get the game all the time, unless you know your situation, and unless you've not played well and, you know, I'm not playing Thursday, I know that. If it's a 50-50 situation, you always feel like, well, there's a chance I may play. I want to get that game. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm taking that look from the outside here and basically saying, no, I would go back with Luukkonen and say, hey, you know what? We gave you the contract, and you probably don't even say that in a conversation. You don't start a conversation with a player by saying, hey, we gave you the big contract. You're playing Thursday night. That's not that. Look, you're our guy. You've, you know, proven last year that you can play at the high level. Your camp has not been the best, and the first game was okay. Mm-hmm. But here's an opportunity to take another step forward. Let's see you take another step forward to where you want to be.
Quick perusal of Daily Faceoff shows us next to nothing when it comes to the goaltenders for today's three.
Undecided, unconfirmed, and likely.
It's like, come on.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? We have a game at 4:30 this afternoon.
And it's 1:30 Seattle time on a Tuesday afternoon. I kind of like that. Start the season in a unique time slot in your local market so everybody knows it's happening.
Yeah.
And then late tonight in Utah.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back from KeyBank Center, and man, let me tell you, it's a day. We have six people in the control room trying to charge their phones simultaneously. Keeps knocking us off the air.
You know what? Maybe I've never seen, this is our last segment of the show.
Is it?
And if you're watching
on MSG, it feels
MSG,
like the first, incredibly.
At the end of the show, the last segment, you always have a countdown clock in the bottom right of your screen. And it's always like a minute 30, 2 minutes. Sometimes we get 3.5, 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We have 13 and a half minutes at the bottom right of the screen right now telling us we have plenty of time for the last segment of the show, which is usually let's run to the end and we're off the air. Now we can kind of pace ourselves to the end of the show.
Does this mean you have to talk about the power play?
Right, because there's a couple of things I want to talk about when it comes to the power play, Duffer. I think everybody watching the game, and I think that the Sabres and Lindy Ruff watching the game can tell that the number one problem mm-hmm. with the power play in those two games were their zone entries. They could not get into the zone, could not set up, could not be spending 40 seconds of move the puck, get the shot, right? So the zone entry is number one. You want to know something that's really funny? You know when people talk about analytics and the numbers and, you know, all the geeks that punch. Sometimes the numbers match with what you see. Sometimes the numbers don't match what you see. You have to be able to analyze the eye test and the numbers to really have a better understanding of what's going on. And sometimes one is going to take over the other.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know what the power play entry success rate is for the Buffalo Sabres in the first two games of the season?
I don't want to know, but you're going to tell me.
It was 71%. Last season, if you had a 71% entry rate on the power play, you were top five in the National Hockey League. How the numbers tell me, but I think what happens is that they've entered over the blue line with possession, mm-hmm. only to lose it 5 feet inside the blue line. Why? Because they were all stacked at the blue line. So I think that that's where the entry percentage numbers are not going to give you a real indication of what's happening. That's number one. Number two, when the Sabres got into the zone, what is one thing Lindy Ruff has talked about how they wanted to create offense 5-on-5 and on the power play? It's having people at the net, mm-hmm. having people in the slot at the net. They never had anybody at the net. They, in two games, it's a short sample, had a 0.33 shot on net from the slot per game mm-hmm. on the power play. Last year, they were 2.5 times better than that, and they were still 27th in the NHL. That's mm-hmm. how bad. Last year, they didn't generate... They were less than one shot on net from the slot per game on the power play. Yeah. That was 27. Now they generated a third of a shot on average, right, on the power play. So
well,
that's bad.
And then the amount of time that we were looking at the lack of high danger chances on the power play last year, right? Like, it was one of those situations where all the numbers made sense because they added up to a number which you would expect.
Which is a
bad power play percentage. But with your zone entry number here, it's kind of interesting. And so where did it break down for them? Because this is what's important moving forward. And it's never one or the other. I understand that. But were the Devils really, really good in preventing Buffalo from doing what they wanted? And or is this something that when Buffalo gets its rhythm, they'll be able to attack against most teams?
I'm going to say it's a little bit of both, but okay, if you have Connor McDavid or Nathan MacKinnon mm-hmm. getting that drop back pass and coming at you,
yes.
you're a defenseman for the New Jersey Devils, and you see McDavid or MacKinnon coming at you, what are you going to do?
Well, you're going to make that noise or vocalize like Alex Pietrangelo
did in the
outdoor game at Tahoe.
He basically said, oh, crap, and it was not oh, crap. It got bleeped out, but he was – so you back off.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is you're probably 15 feet inside the blue line when McDavid enters because you don't want to get burned. That never happened for Buffalo because either Thompson – or Quinn, or Dahlin, or whoever was on the delayed, didn't have the threat of, I'm going to zoom right by you, that you have to respect me and back off. They never had that threat. And because they kept getting stopped, it actually gave New Jersey even more confidence to say, we're going to stand the blue line, and we're going to slow down. So for me, it was trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, and, we're going to keep trying what we've been working on, but you build more and more and more confidence for the other team and less and less and less for your team. And everybody stop at a standstill. Now, today the Sabres work on the power play. One big, big difference, and it's not that, you know, Jason Zucker is on the top power play unit with Thompson Cousins, is that Alex Tuch is not on the first power play unit right now because the Sabres are using two defensemen on that top power play unit. They have Power and Dahlin with Thompson, Cousins, and Zucker, which tells me this. When you have two defensemen, it's because you're going to have a full ice breakout.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have one defenseman in one corner, one forward curling in the other corner. You're going to have everybody come up the ice together. You're not going to have four guys at the blue line standing still.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, tells me that the Sabres are basically looking at their entry and saying, okay, that's not working, and we're going to put two defensemen on because we are going to come up together with five players with speed, and the dump and go or the dump and chase or the chip and chase or whatever. And once you've opened that up, then teams are going to adjust, and maybe you can go back to the drop back, but it's not happening right now. You're not threatening anything with that.
It's a pretty interesting development.
Very interesting development, because on the power play two unit, you got Quinn, Krebs, Kulik, Tuck, and Byram. So that's your second unit. So Tuck, who has always been with Thompson on the top unit, it was Skinner last year or whatnot.
Yep.
Now Tuck has moved to a different unit because they are putting two defensemen on the top unit.
Kings come in. It's the home opener on Thursday, 7 p.m. Obviously, did I step on that?
No, I think I stepped on your wire.
Now I can't hear myself, but hopefully we're on.
No, we are. I can hear you. You're good.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the Kings are here, and the home opener is presented by the BFLO store.
Yes.
And LA had a 4-1-1 preseason. Very, very, very quickly on what to expect from the Kings. Quentin Byfield had a nice preseason.
Quentin Byfield had a really, really nice season. No Drew Doughty, so it's going to be like by committee on the back end, obviously. Mm-hmm. I felt like Philip Deneau was noticeable in the games that he played. Again, you got Kopitar, you got Deneau, so you're looking at the middle of the ice, right?
Yeah.
How did the Sabres, Thompson, Cousins respond to that?
Yeah.
That is a big, hurdle, because I feel like Kopitar and Deneau are probably two of the top full ice, defensive minded, responsible centermen. And I was right. The Kings stayed in Quebec City for a couple extra days,
mm-hmm.
And they're coming in a day early than usual, so they're coming in today to be able to adjust to and practice in Buffalo.
Altitude. St. Louis and...
Are we at a different altitude here?
St. Louis and Seattle, Boston and Florida, Chicago and Utah, the triple header of NHL action today.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to... Boston is going to start Corpusello today because they named him the starter a week ago, although they signed Jeremy Swayman, which we haven't talked about. Jeremy Swayman gets his wish, more than 64 million reasons, like Kim Neely said, mm-hmm. to stay in Boston.
Yep.
8.25. They couldn't go more than 8.25. It's Sorokin in Long Island with the Islanders signed for 8.25. Hellebuck signed for 8.5. You couldn't pay Swayman more than that, but he got the max that I think he could have gotten. I think Boston actually overpaid by maybe $500,000, $250,000 on Jeremy Swayman, which is fine,
mm-hmm.
because if you saw Corpusello's last two outings in the preseason, it wasn't going to work for Boston. So Swayman is in, but he's not starting today.
No, it's Bob at one end and Corpusello at the other. What do you expect from St. Louis and Seattle? This is a big... relaunch, if you will, for the Kraken with Dan Bylsma as head coach.
Yeah, I think, I love Disco Dan. I think his time in Buffalo was tumultuous, but I think Dan Bylsma is going to do some really good things in Seattle. But I expect St. Louis to be a force in the Central Division. Maybe not at the top of the division,
mm-hmm.
but they are making the playoffs. I think the St. Louis Blues are going to be a team that is going to be fun to watch this year.
And Chicago, Utah to round things out. Salt Lake City gets the first real taste of NHL action tonight against Connor Bedard and the Blackhawks.
Well, when you watch the game tonight, you're going to wonder, what's this rink looking like, this? Because mm-hmm. it's a basketball arena. And at both ends, you got to push the seats back. And there's a wall, basically, of 15 or 20 rows of seats behind each goalies. So, yes, kind of like Barkley was with the Islanders playing at Barkley. At one end at Barkley, there were some obstructed seats.
Barkley's.
There's an S. It's not Latvian. But Barkley's center.
Go Bill.
Go Bill. Inside joke there. But there were some obstructed seats at one end. In Utah, it's at both ends. But let's not forget that they will do a billion-dollar renovation on that building, and it's going to be fantastic. But the buzz is going to be something fun to see for the Utah Hockey Club.
Do you remember when we were here for the watch party on Saturday, and then after we were done with our post game, you were remarking how the arena floor was laid out?
Oh, for Jelly Roll?
For Jelly Roll.
See, I know this guy.
Yes. Tage was there.
Yeah.
Greenway was there. I was lucky enough to be there. Jelly Roll put on... I don't want to phrase it this way because I don't want to compare production and make the show bigger than it was. I will say this. Jelly Roll came across to me as perhaps the most sincere superstar performer I've ever seen. He has an incredible way of connecting with the fans. But the point is when you were looking at the floor, you were wondering, why do they have it marked off down at the one end, right? So the stage is at one end, but there's a platform at the other. And I don't want to, give it away for people that are still planning to see him in the near future. But his whole show, there's a little countdown on the video board, and he starts walking in, but he's just walking at an incredibly leisurely pace amidst the fans on the floor going to that other platform, right? And then starts there. Music continues. He presumably uses the hockey hallway then, mm-hmm. works his way back to the main stage, and goes from there. But all the while, like, there is eye contact and waving and just, I can't imagine how many people felt like I locked eyes with Jelly Roll or he waved at me or whatever. And these are all fascinating little moments. And as a concert goer, like, you know, it's pretty special. And I think he made everybody feel incredibly special. I was super super impressed with his whole show. Within it had a couple of covers. I mean, he paid tribute to the late Toby Keith with beautiful, you know, Should Have Been a Cowboy. There was a I caught it on one note. Green Day, Good Riddance, Time of Your Life. I was like, so there was a lot. There was a lot.
So really good stuff. I remember coming to see Imagine Dragons here, They set up a stage at the other end, and they went to the other end and did a little intimate concert. And the fact that they played all the instruments and it was, you know, them playing the whole time, and there was something to. I went back and I was like, they were really good. Like, it wasn't the big production, but it was just the fact that they. They were intimate with everybody in that concert. And I would think that's the same sense you got from Jelly Roll. And I love, like, I was listening to a little Toby Keith driving back from Quebec City yesterday. So that's my country genre.
We've got 15 seconds before they literally pull the plug. Oh. Paterka and Benson are doing better. And we will see, you know, keep them in day-to-day category and obviously stay with our Sabre socials and enjoy as much turkey as you can when you come to the rink. On Thursday.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.